The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about relinquishing suffering. I've talked about this before and I'm sure I'll do it again. The Buddha said, I teach two things. There's a huge Pali Canon, he says, I teach two things, suffering and the end of suffering. And everything he taught comes down to this at bottom. Sometimes people think that what he was saying was that everything is suffering and that life is awful. Well, sometimes life is awful, but not all the time. And it's not meant to be negative. Dukkha, the word for suffering, is also translated as unsatisfactoriness or stress. Life can be stressful, we know that. And not that everything is awful all the time or the stress all the time. Everything is subject to dukkha. Everything is subject to unsatisfactoriness or stress. Things aren't perfect. They don't stay great. But we do enjoy things. We do have good relationships. Things do work out sometimes. It's not like everything's dreadful all the time. And that's fine. But ultimately, the things of this world are not satisfactory because they don't last. Now, everything changes all the time. We change all the time. We can't cling on to anything. Our circumstances change. We may prosper, and then we lose everything. Our relationships change. People die, they leave us. Or we leave them. We change. We grow old and sick, and we die. And of course, as I said, change isn't always a bad thing. Often it's a good thing. We learn from life. We learn from our mistakes. We get more wise. We do things in better ways. We change for the better. We get sick and then we get better. We may lose something and we gain something. A relationship may not work out, but then something else might. But none of it can be held on to. None of it will make us happy forever. And it's trying to hold on to things that create suffering, trying to block it up. Everything constantly changes. Everything constantly flows through. We try to cling on to something. We're obstructing it, trying to keep it, and it doesn't work. Trying to hold on to a relationship that we really need to let go of is just painful. And maybe we do, and then things work out better. Something else comes in to fill that gap. Clinging to memories of the past. Oh, it used to be this way. I used to have this lovely house, and now it's gone. Oh, I had this lovely family, and now they've all left and gone to, you know, Australia. holding on to old grievances and hurts. They did this awful thing to me and I'll never get over it. I'm determined I won't, you know. And, you know, things would have been so good if that hadn't happened to me, if I hadn't done that, the regret of the past. Why did I do that dumb thing? Why did I turn left at Albuquerque? Why didn't I just go straight on? It would have been so much better. And clinging on to these things is suffering, you know. Clinging to what we want also, what we'd like, what we don't like. It's very normal, but it creates suffering and stress. We get very intent on something we want, and we're all worried we might not get it. And then we do get it, and we get sick of it, or it breaks, or we lose it, or, you know, we want something else. 5 minutes later, we go, okay, I've got that, and I want something else. You know, shopping on Amazon, you get the nice package, you open it, happy for 5 minutes, then you want something different. It's endless, endless, bottomless. Getting to little arguments, clinging onto our view, you know. Little stresses about what we want or how we think things should be done. It should be done this way. I really know what's best, you know. Our views and opinions, cling to them tightly. We identify with them. I'm this kind of person. I'm a person who thinks like this. I have these views. I like these things and I don't like those things. I think like this and I don't think like that. And I like these people, these nice and wise people who think like me. And I don't much like those dumb people over there who think like that, you know. And if I didn't have these views, who would I be? You know, if I'm a person who has these views and I'm this kind of person, what would I be without them? I'd feel half-dressed, you know. I am my views. I am my history. I am my career, my relationships, how I am seen by others. They all make up this me. We identify with all these things. And actually, they can all create suffering. Not all the time, but they can really be obstructive and blind our wisdom. Fear. Everybody has fear. Fear of loss. Fear of the future, fear of sickness, insecurity, fear for the people we love, fear for our own safety, especially nowadays there's so much violence in our world. People have a great deal of fear. But many of our fears come from our own mind. Most of them do. Most of the time we're not actually in mortal danger. We fear the unknown. But why? It's just the unknown. It doesn't mean it's going to be any worse than what things are now. It might be better. We don't know. And if it is, we have to go through it. When the awful thing happens, we actually deal with it. We take it in stride and we get through it somehow. We all hear, we've got through it. You know? Wait to see what happens next week. It's the unknown. That's why we're afraid. We think the worst may happen. And if it does, we want to be ready for it. Yeah. But actually it doesn't help, we're just afraid, not really any better prepared. We fear death and sickness, which come to everybody. You know, people have been getting sick and dying for a very long time. And when they come, again, we just go through them. We deal with sickness, we accept it, we learn to work with it and to make the best of it. Sometimes sickness turns out to be a great blessing because it keeps us quiet. We have to turn our attention to something different than just running about doing stuff and being healthy and all that. Something slows us down. There's something more than this, more to life than just being young, healthy, and strong. Suddenly, I'm brought up short and I have to look more deeply. How do I deal with this? Why is it happening to me? What do I need to do? How do I make the most of it, make the best of it? Live with it. Something that will help us accept it and do our best. Sometimes any kind of loss can be really a great gift in a way. We lose something and we may gain something much subtler and much more profound and really valuable. Fear of sudden violence, that can happen anywhere. We can be careful and not, you know, walk out looking to be mugged and not, you know, move to war-torn countries, of which there seem to be a great many. But we can't really find a safe place in this world. There's no place that is completely safe. Anything can happen at any time. But we don't have to live in dread. So what do we do with all this clinging on to wanting to be safe or clinging on to what we want and what we don't like and all our views of me and all that? How do we relinquish suffering by relinquishing our clinging to things? By sitting still as best we can in the midst of all conditions. Wisdom. Sitting still, allowing wisdom to arise. Not just running around trying to get away from things or trying to get things. Sitting still. Looking at our own mind, see what it's up to. Where we've been clinging on to something. That's compassion. See where we've been creating suffering for ourselves and other beings. And thereby allowing compassion to come in. Compassion for ourselves, compassion for others. Wisdom and compassion, a constant theme in Buddhism. They go together. You can't have wisdom without compassion. It's just me trying to better myself. And compassion without wisdom is kind of undirected. We need to have both wisdom and compassion. Wisdom to see what we need to do, and compassion when we don't do it, and when others don't seem to do it, and compassion to help ourselves to live in a more skillful and happy way. You know, they go together. Seeing where we're clinging onto things in little ways. When you find ourselves arguing with somebody, trying to win our point, is it really worth arguing about? And if I do seem to win my point, does it make me a better and wiser person? You know, not really. Does it make me happy? No, I probably go away a little sad because I've just had this argument with somebody. When we're worried that we might not get something we want, to see that, to see that we're all anxious while we get this thing, and you think, so what? You know, if I don't get it and somebody else gets it, well, do I have to be so self-feeding, self-concerned, that if I get the thing, it's great, and if somebody else gets it, it's bad, you know? And we don't get the thing, we're all resentful because somebody else has got what we wanted. Could we not have a little sympathetic joy for that person? You know, it would be so much nicer to be able to rejoice with somebody who has got something we would have liked. Not always easy, rarely easy. If we can look at what our mind is doing and consider, is this really worth getting upset about? Is it really worth getting all, you know, involved in, invested in the grand scheme of things? Maybe other things that are more important. We all know when we're all worried about some little thing, and then some big thing happens, and the little thing is completely gone from our mind. It happens over and over. So when those little things are there, maybe we can sometimes consider, do I need to get all steamed up about this little thing? Or could I just relinquish it now without having to have some big thing come and blow it out of the water? It would be nice if we could just relinquish now and save ourselves a lot of trouble. Wisdom and compassion. Wisdom to see what we need to do, to see where we're creating suffering, and compassion for ourselves and for others. And in bigger ways, having practiced letting go in all these small ways, it helps us when bigger things come along to relinquish our grip, not to hold on so tightly to our agenda, our plans, what we want, what we'd have liked, what we don't like, our views of me and what I need and all that. Again, when we get sick, we can learn to practice patience and acceptance. When we lose something, or maybe a great loss of somebody we love, maybe we can find strength to continue, to keep going, not to give up on life, not dwell in the past for too long, not grieve for too long. Grief arises, let it come and go. It doesn't stay there all the time, actually. It comes and goes. To let it come and let it go, not keep holding on to grief or sorrow or our history. When we're afraid, if we've practiced sitting still with little fears, little worries, when a big fear comes, we're in a much better position to sit still with that. When we're really afraid, sometimes when something really, you hear all these stories about someone who's suddenly in mortal danger. Someone's got a gun to their head or something, and suddenly they're completely still. And that diffuses the situation sometimes. Sometimes not. When it doesn't happen, you don't hear about it. But the situations when people can actually sit still and let go in the middle of a really extreme situation. You know? And if you've practiced that in the little ways in our lives, I think we'll be in much better shape when things are really hard, when we're faced with illness or loss or physical danger or whatever it might be. all in all these little ways, we can practice looking to see what the mind is doing, to see where we're clinging onto something, clinging onto what we want, clinging onto what we like, clinging onto what we don't want. Or I really want to do, you know, have this course in life, and I really want to get there. And because, you know, sometimes suddenly something totally diverts us. To be able to accept that and see where our new course may lead us might be much better. Facing our bigger fears with courage and faith is much easier when we practice in little ways. Facing our desires and not wantings of things. If you do it in little ways, it helps us in the bigger ways. That habit of mind, of looking at our own ingrained habits of mind and making a new habit of mind of looking and seeing. Look how I get, how I feed resentment. Look how often I find something to get irritated about. Look how I find myself afraid all the time. Or look how I find myself looking down and seeing the worst in situations. We all have our own versions of these. The thing that our little mind looks for, ah, there's something to get angry about, you know. We grab onto it. Even though it's a suffering, we grab onto it. It's amazing what the mind will do. And if we develop that habit of just looking to see what our mind is up to, with compassion, otherwise we can't see straight, with wisdom, so we can see the consequences, then we can relinquish that grip, that little mind that looks for the thing, and then feeds it, stabs us up with it. And then wonder why we're unhappy. We all do it, actually, in different ways. And if we can see it, then we can begin to relinquish. The festival of Nagarjuna is today. Sometimes you might think, why Nagarjuna? There's always great, you know, beings in our lineage. Why Nagarjuna? Well, he was quite something. He was a really great thinker and writer. He wrote voluminous treatises of called the wisdom scriptures. He wrote a lot of that. And you might think he was somewhat sort of detached from us human beings and all our little struggles with life. Here he is writing about emptiness and deep wisdom and all this. However, he also wrote about compassion. In the litany we sang today, he's constantly talking about kindness to beings, compassion for beings, because compassion and wisdom go together. And one of the things he writes, he says, thus the essential nature of all bodhisattvas, that's us, is a great loving heart, and all sentient beings constitute the object of its love. A great loving heart. This is a clue for us. We can cultivate a great loving heart, not a little small reasonable heart, but a great loving heart. And it's not a gushy thing of just, oh, I love everybody, everything is lovely, you know. It's not like that. You can't do that. It's just taking care with beings that come our way, not go out looking for beings, there's plenty of them, but taking care with what we encounter, a little creature on the path that's going to get squashed if we don't move it. We just pick it up and move it. The spider in the sink is trying to get out. We might not think, oh, I love this little spider. We might just put it in a cup and take him outside and not even think about it. We just do it. That's the great loving heart. It doesn't have to be a gushy, feely thing. Compassion doesn't have to be feeling wonderfully compassionate towards all beings. Sometimes that arises, sometimes it doesn't. If we felt totally gushy all the time, it'd be impossible to live with. But just doing our best, just trying to do what's needed, you know? This is the great loving heart. It's not something different from us. It's not. And with people, you know, in the same way, we don't have to be filled with love for everybody. We just don't want to hate them. It's nice if we don't fear them and hate them, you know? If we know that we're all connected. This is the clue. That great loving heart is because we're all one being. And to bear that in mind, even if we don't know it in our own blood and bones, to think that maybe it is so, you know, we are all one being. Even people who are doing terrible things, they're part of us. I was thinking that this morning, thinking, you know, these young people who go, I mean, I think they're mostly young, like people in armies who kill other people in the name of religion. I'm sure they have times when they're not slaughtering anyone. They're just sitting around cooking beans and chatting to each other, or, you know, having a beer together or something. You know, nobody is completely awful all the time. To consider all these beings who do terrible things, they're just human beings who've not taken a very good turn somewhere and maybe would wish they had not done what they have done and were not where they are. Nobody kills another human being and doesn't get a terrible consequence. To feel compassion for people who kill other beings, no happy person would do that. Far worse to be someone who kills others than to be one of the victims, actually. Far worse. Could we have some compassion for those people and not hate them? We don't have to love what they do, but to not hate them, not think of them as some separate, awful thing. There's so much hatred and division in our world. If we can relinquish some of that and not be hating, not be divided in the same way, it would really help. Sitting still with our own fear and hatred, you know, while seeing the fear and hatred that results in terrible things. Our own fear and hatred, we all have fear and hatred. It's not all that different. We all have fear arise, maybe hatred of things we don't understand, you know. It's not that anything is intrinsically evil, any person is intrinsically evil. It's ignorance that causes fear, hatred, slaughter. But wisdom and compassion can really help. And we can practice and foster wisdom and compassion in our own lives to find compassion for those beings who suffer and who inflict suffering on others. To find compassion for ourselves when we inflict suffering on ourselves and others, because we do, we're not perfect. When we make a mistake, when we fall into our old ways, when we find ourselves angry, judgmental and hating, oh, it's all right. I don't have to hate myself for hating people. I can just say, oh, I don't have to do that. So I don't have to do that. Just to try to find a little compassion for ourselves and for other beings. Compassion for the ways we ourselves create suffering and division and harm. And to begin to relinquish that grip, to relinquish our grip on me and what I want, or me and what I think should be right, or me and my own little, you know, hooks that I hang on to. To see with a larger view, not just our own little view, to see our connection with all beings, to see that we are all part of one being. None of us separate for even a moment, no matter what we may feel like. Suffering is really just a feeling of separation. If we knew that we're all part of one being, suffering would be much reduced. We'd have much less fear, a lot more wisdom and compassion. But we can aim towards that, we can look to that, live by that, that we are all part of one being. And when we find ourselves getting angry or righteous or even puffy about the news, you know, to say, oh, wait a minute, I don't have to buy into this quite so much. I can relinquish this a little bit. We're all part of the great matter, the great flow of life. And when we hold on to something, we're blocking up that flow a little bit. We can't hold on to it anyway. It gets torn out of our grasp. So we might as well come with open hands and let it all flow through rather than try to grip onto something and have it torn away. Because when we let go and allow things to flow through, we know more clearly that we are all just part of that flow of life, just little bubbles in that stream, as it were. We come and go, we arise and fall, and there's nothing we can cling on to at all. We're very temporary, we're just here for a short time. Maybe we can make the best of it, make the most of it, do our best to practice compassion and wisdom, to see what our mind gets up to in small ways and in big ways, to do our little bit to reduce the suffering in the world, offer merit for beings who create suffering, offer merit for beings who have had horrible suffering inflicted upon them. It's unimaginable, some of the things that people go through. We can't do a huge amount about it, we can't take it all away, but we can do our bit, and our own effort has greater effect than we know. Our own kindness ripples out to other beings. We all know what it's like when we're having a bad day and somebody's nice to us, you know. It really helps. If we're having a bad day and somebody's just crabby, then we get crabbier. But if we ourselves meet crabbiness with kindness, it can really help somebody who's in a crabby state. Because we all know what that's like when we're all puffy and somebody does a kind act for us, how it completely diffuses that. It's amazing, the power of kindness is huge. And never to forget that, always to trust it. Our own little acts of kindness, our own attempts at stillness, seeing what we're doing, seeing what our mind is up to, and relinquishing our grip. Relinquishing our little view of me and my life and my stuff and my wants and my agenda and my everything. We're not the center of the universe. And to remember that is a great blessing, actually, to know fully that we are not the most important thing. There's something much bigger of which we're a part. And to devote ourselves to that, to turn to that, and do our best to live by that. That is the way to the end of suffering. Wisdom and compassion. O Nagarjuna, with his great wise mind and his kind and loving heart, may we aspire to this too.